The reading this morning is from the Christian sacred text from the New Testament book of Luke, not Matthew, as your order of service says. A little proofreading fluke there. But this is from the book of Luke, chapter 15, verses 11 through 35. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant land. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? And here I am dying of hunger. I will get up, and I will go to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off, and he went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion and ran to him and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves, and he asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he's got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat to celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" Those of us raised in the Christian tradition are probably familiar with the story of this young man who he just couldn't get a grip somehow. He didn't like his life the way it was, and he did something drastic and dramatic to change it. What we may not realize in the 21st century is that this was a really serious breach of conduct and breach of culture in the time and place when it occurred. The son said to his perfectly healthy, perfectly decent father, "I want what I'm supposed to get when you die, only I want it now." He was in essence saying to his father, "I wish you were dead." And he was also disrespecting his elders, which was a much bigger deal then than it is now, far more than we can imagine. There were a lot of ways that his father could have responded with the complete support of the community that would have been a very mild version of saying, "You are a little jerk. Who do you think you are?" But his father did not do that. He divided his property. He gave his son the money that he asked for, and he sent him forth, loving his son and grieving the loss. The text doesn't say that he loved his son and grieved his loss, but we can tell that he did, and we're going to get back to that. The son went away, and before long he had squandered his property in dissolute living. The story doesn't say exactly what kind of dissolute living, but we are able to assume that this son was not somebody with good planning skills or very strong thinking skills, for that matter. Before very long, apparently, he had sunk to some pretty sleazy depths. He ended up in a distant country, alone, hungry, and tending pigs in a field. To somebody with his background, working with the pigs would have been the dirtiest and most demeaning work that he could possibly do. And beyond that humiliation, he was so hungry that he would have been glad to eat some of the pigs' food. He was low down. He was bad off. And then something unexplained and remarkable happened, and we don't know what it was, but we need to remember that this is a story. This is not a news account. These are not real people. They are here to communicate a message to us, not to communicate facts and information. This phrase, though, evokes such tenderness and such promise. It says that the son came to himself. We don't know. He hasn't been himself all this time. We don't know why, but he came to himself. He realized that his father's servants had better lives than he had, and he began to wonder. Now that he was back with himself, he began to wonder, could I go back? Is it possible? Could I ask my father for a job? Could I ask to be one of his hired hands? He had learned a lot, to be sure, while he was away from himself. He knew that he couldn't go back as his father's son. He knew he had blown that chance. He knew he had done something inexcusable, and there was no way for him to make up for that. How much nerve did it take, do you suppose? How much courage for that son to finally put his foot in the path and decide to head for home? Remember, I said we'd get back to how we know from the text that the father loved his son and grieved his loss. Here's how we know. Here's what it says. While the son was still far off, his father saw him coming and ran to him. He ran. When I was in seminary, we spent so much time focused on the text, the biblical languages, studying the word, capital W, and that study was so gratifying and so profoundly fascinating, but it wasn't everything. I went to a recreational ministry workshop once where somebody told us, when you read the Bible stories, look at it as if you're blocking a play for the stage. Look at the motion. Look at the action. Where are people standing? What are they doing? Imagine what this movement tells us, what it shows us. The father saw his son coming, and he ran to him. Can you see that old man? He was an old man. He had on a robe and sandals. And can you imagine him hiking that robe up to his knees? And look at his sandals. Think about them. They were made out of leather, and they were probably curled at the edges, and they were probably battered, and they were probably dusty. It is hard to run in those clothes. And he ran anyway. And when the son... look where the son was when the father was running to him. He was far off, it says. He was way out there. And that phrase brings to our imaginations such a picture. Think about the father going about his daily routine. Was it weeks? Was it months? We don't know. How long was it, I wonder? And he would do his everyday tasks, and he would take care of his farm, make sure things were going okay, and then toward evening, when it was okay for him to rest, he would sit down for a little while and watch the road. That's probably not all that he did. Maybe he watched for the sunset. Maybe sang. I don't know if they smoked pipes then. Who knows? But always in the back of his mind, thinking about his son. Always just with one eye on the road, every once in a while, knowing that his son was out there. always holding on to just enough hope to keep him watching off in the distance. If we are lucky, we can imagine what it must have felt like to him when finally, after all that watching, way off there was his son coming down the road. And imagine the son. Can we see him? He was so anxious and ashamed, and he was trudging down the road with his head bent. Remember, the text said that when he came back to himself, back there with the pigs, he thought about what he would say to his father. Remember how he practiced it a little bit? I can visualize him making that excruciating journey back to his home and saying that little speech to himself softly, maybe daring to be hopeful, maybe scared to death. And then something made him look up, and look what he saw. His father was running to him down the road, filled with compassion, the text says. All of our longing, all of our yearning is made tangible in that scene. Our fear, our hurt, our uncertainty, our insecurity standing weary in the road. An absolute, complete, unconditional love running joyfully to gather us up and hold us. And what comes next is that fantastic celebration. The son started his speech just the way he practiced it. Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But he never got to the part about, can I be one of your hired hands? Because his father was already giving directions to everybody. And he was saying, do it quickly. Bring him some beautiful clothes and bring him a ring and bring him new sandals and kill the fatted calf. And that was a big deal. Those people didn't eat meat. That was a big deal, a big idea. And his father just couldn't get enough of it. He couldn't listen to what apology this son had. He was so busy celebrating. This level of opulence suggests that a whole lot of people were going to be invited to this feast. And this is another component of his father's compassion. He wanted to let everybody know. He wanted this to be a public statement. Don't hold it against my son what he did. I'm not holding it against him, and I don't want you to either. He was lost, as the text says, and now he's found. Can we possibly engage this story and remain untouched by the mercy and the compassion and the enormity of this father's absolute, unassailable love? How can we hear about this wretched son without feeling that love, the power in it, the possibility in it? And yet, the story has two parts. In the past, when I've brought messages about the prodigal son to congregations, I always say that there are two separate stories going on here, and indeed there are. The heart of the story for me has always been the younger son's story, and it still is. Last summer, though, I talked with a congregation who really wanted to hear more and say more about that elder son. Let's hear again his part. Now, the elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he's got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have worked like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life, was lost and is found." Notice the ways that this elder son, who had worked like a slave for his father and never disobeyed his command, has distanced himself from this family. Remember what I said about the action and blocking a play? He was out in the field and he heard music as he approached the house. He didn't know what was going on, but he didn't go inside to find out. He called a slave. He learned from a slave that his brother was back. Was he glad that that lost brother was home? Was he relieved? Was he curious about how he was or what he had been doing? Apparently not. The text says he became angry and refused to go in. Imagine how far removed from his brother and from his father he must have felt to not even want to go see him. Again, visualize this action. The father went outside. He left the party and went out into the field to where his elder son was. And he began to plead with him. See that parallel? He went down the road to his younger son. He went out in the field to his elder son. Nobody ever had to meet this father halfway. But the elder son just started in with accusations. And no matter how bitter they are also terribly poignant because they make clear just how alone he felt the whole time he was home with his father. "You never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends," he says. Who are his friends? Who are these separate friends? Everybody in the village is invited to this celebration. Who could my friends be that he's talking about that wouldn't already be there? This feeling of being apart emerges again in what he says next. "When this son of yours comes back, not this brother of mine." And again, the anger is so vibrant. "When this son of yours comes back, who has devoured his property with prostitutes." Who said anything about prostitutes? He doesn't know where his brother has been. He doesn't know what his brother has done. Nobody ever said anything about prostitutes except this elder brother who is so angry. The brother who stayed home did not feel any sense of belonging to this entire event or to his family. In the story of the prodigal son, we understand that the father means God, or for those for whom that word is unsettling, the father means original, unconditional, all-embracing love. He went out, as we've seen, seeking each of his sons, inviting each into the joy of being loved without qualification. The younger son, the one who really messed up, was able to receive that invitation. He went away. He messed up. He repented. He came back. He was forgiven. The elder son, the one who did right all the time, evidently couldn't receive it. There was too much bitterness and resentment and anger standing in his way. Why? We have to wonder. Why? Henry Nouwen has written a book called The Return of the Prodigal Son based on a painting by Rembrandt, which hangs in the Hermitage in what used to be Leningrad and is now St. Petersburg again. It's a stunning painting of the father and his two sons, and Nouwen's reflections on it are compelling. The book is called Return of the Prodigal Son, and I urge you to read it if you haven't read it already. Nouwen meditated on this painting for many hours and during that time wondered a lot about himself and his own identity as elder son. Nouwen says the younger brother's behavior is clear. He makes a bad mistake and he realizes it and he asks for forgiveness and receives it. Pretty clear. The lostness of the other son, however, is much harder to identify, says Nouwen. For many of us, this anger and resentment feel all too familiar. I did right. I did my duty. I followed the rules. I was always good. So why don't I get a big party? Why don't I get the prize? Why don't I get invited? Why am I so lost? Nouwen suggests that this elder son's jealous, self-righteous anger and resentment are the dark sides of the virtue of being the obedient, reliable model citizen. In my conversations with elder sons and daughters around this story, I hear the same refrain over and over and over. I have the right to feel this way. I am entitled to this anger. It's legitimate for me to want this. In such a heartfelt declaration, one plea is clear, and it's the same plea made by the elder son in this story. See me. Recognize me. Don't let me be invisible. Affirm me. This is what Nouwen calls the bitter fruit of the need to please. The question before us, says Nouwen, is simply, what can we do to make the return possible? His answer, we must not only recognize that we are lost, but also be prepared to be found and brought home. The key to how to do that, says Nouwen, lies in trust. We must trust in that original, unconditional, without qualification love that was there before we were. It will be there long after we are gone. It's always, always for us. It is never against us. And it will run down the road to get us. It will come out in the field after us. It wants us. And we must trust that love. Some time ago, I had a conversation with a woman who is an elder daughter. It's a person that I have known all my life. We were talking about the story of the prodigal son because I was telling about my own glorious reunion with my prodigal daughter. As soon as I mentioned the Bible story, this woman said, I've always felt sorry for that older brother in that story. He got a bad deal. I knew that. I thought to myself, of course. But I pointed out to her how the father came outside to get that son, how much the father wanted him, how the father pleaded with him. I reminded her that the father said, all that I have is yours. You are always with me. But the only thing the woman could think about was that that younger son got a party and he did not do right. The elder son had a choice, I told this woman, and so do we. He can stand alone out there in the field with his anger and resentment, or he can leave that behind and come into the party where he is wanted, where he is invited, to his brother who is returned safe and healed, to his father who is pleading with him to come in. The elder son gets to choose. He gets to choose. The woman did not respond, but I think she felt my sadness. I have no idea if she realized that on some level I was talking about her. But I know she heard me. The only thing keeping us from participating in that joyful celebration is our decision not to. The question I have for her and for each of us and for myself, the question to embrace and explore is this: what would it take for us to put down our anger and go inside to the party? What would it take? The story of the prodigal son ends with the father's declaration of love for both of his children, and I would say for all of his children. Did the elder son ever open himself up to that love? We don't know. The story doesn't tell us. It stops before it ever makes that ending final. It's up to us to make the decision. It's up to us to accept the invitation. We get to choose. And so may it be. Amen.